very much. Thanks very much for coming.
Thanks very much for the invitation to speak today. Is this on? Do I need to turn this up?
Sounds all right, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
working its best. You can't really...
Good. Okay, thanks so much. So I work for the Medical Research Council, and this is obviously, as most of you know, a government-funded body that works on improving human health, all types of human health, cancer, heart disease, neurodegeneration, you name it. So really the aim of my work is to understand more about why the brain works, what goes wrong in the brain when you're poorly, and also understand how that links to sleep and how it links to circadian rhythms. That's what I'm going to talk about today. So things I'm going to try and cover lots of things very briefly today, not try and cover the whole field of sleep and dreaming and everything in one go, but try and touch on a few of the main themes, and hopefully it'll encourage you to ask lots of questions further on the line. So some of you may have been here 18 months ago, and I started with a couple of jokes, and some of them worked, some of them didn't. So well, I've actually got a new joke this year, so just to let you know, so just to make sure that no one's cheating. And so, okay, so why did the man sleep under an old tractor? Because he wanted to wake up oily in the morning. Because oily sounds like early, you see how it works? It's a New York accent, it works a lot better. Anyway, so that's my joke, that's good. So if I'm going to start with a little bit about what's sleep for, talk a little bit about what happens when we sleep, a little bit about what happens, how we sleep in the position in the bed, a little bit about how that's controlled by the body and the brain, a little bit, tiny bit about how sleep disruption might be affecting disease and in human health. So I'm not a clinician, I'm not a doctor, so a medical doctor, so I'm happy to answer any questions, but I'm not a clinician doctor. So things about science, research I can answer, but things about your ailments, I'm not quite so... I'm happy to answer them, but they might not be the correct answer. So... the first thing is, say, why do we actually need to sleep at all? Because obviously we all sleep every day. Hopefully all of us sleep every day, a few hours or lots of hours. Some of us need more sleep than others. Some people sleep very well every night. Some people don't sleep very well. Some people don't sleep very well when they've got something on their mind. Some people like to lie in. Some people like to get up early. All these different combinations. So really there's no rule in the human, certainly in human terms, how much you have to sleep. Everyone has a slightly different profile, slightly different patterns of sleep, slightly different body rhythms, slightly different ways they run their life, and there's really no rule of saying you must sleep a certain number of hours per night. I just want to get that clear very early on, because lots of people ask me, how much sleep do I need? Well, how much sleep you need is really how much your body tells you you need. Often if you have a very difficult job, you're working very late, it might be hard to get enough sleep as you want. But most people, if they can get enough sleep, then they should be fine. I mean, having a good night's sleep is very good for you, and obviously what is important is that it's not to miss on your sleep. And you can't catch up on sleep that you've missed. That's something I'll touch on a bit later. So having good night's sleep is very good. Having good night's sleep every night is obviously very important for your health. So you can't just sleep 2 hours a night for a week and then sleep for 14 hours the next week. It doesn't quite work like that. You can't really catch up your sleep. So very importantly, having good night's sleep is very good for you, and I can touch on that a little bit later. So what's sleep actually for? Well, that's actually very important. So why do you actually sleep at all? Why do any organisms, why do any animals sleep at all? Well, we still don't quite know. Certainly in terms of calories, in terms of energy, actually lying on the bed doing nothing is only about 50 to 100 calories less than actually sleeping. So actually, it's only about a piece of bread difference between being asleep and being awake and lying still. So we're not saving much energy by being asleep. As I'll show later, the brain is actually very active when we're asleep. So actually, it's not about energy saving. One of the things I think about at the moment, which is really quite new research, is that there is sleep in the humans, particularly in sort of more complex mammals like humans and obviously apes and some of the other more sort of furry mammals, if you like, is that sleep's all about memory, what's called memory consolidation. And that basically means a way that your brain is wiring itself while you're asleep to try and process what's happening during the day. So if you had something exciting's happened or lots of things are going through your mind, you've had a very busy day, then sleep is actually partly to help you process all that information you've had, all the things that you've seen or heard or smelt, and that goes through the brain, and during your sleep pattern, it all gets processed by the brain. And it sounds quite a complex kind of idea, but I'll illustrate it quite simply. So it's quite a simple experiment they've done. It's actually very, very recent research, actually very powerful research. So what they've shown here is that actually having a good night's sleep actually helps you remember quite simple facts. Okay, so let's start with a simple experiment. What they've done is they've taken people that are right-handed, and they've used their left hand, and people that are left-handed use their right hand, so they're back to their wrong hand. And simply because they've got their hand, they numbered their fingers 1 to 5. So let's do this with my high-tech call for today. So we're going to do a hand with some... I thought I was going to make a bunch of bananas. So there's a hand with some fingers on. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, that's good. That's good. We're doing all right. That's good. That's the maths. That's fine. Okay, so you can try this yourself if you like. So let's have your wrong hand. Let's number them 1 to 5. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So your thumb is number 1, your little finger is number 5. And what they did is actually asked people, typically it's students, obviously not always students do all these exercises. So the whole of science is always biased by poor students doing all these exercises all around the world. But anyway, this is a very simple example. So you've taken your hand, you take your wrong hand, and basically you basically tap out a sequence of numbers. So if I write a number, simple sequence on the board here, let's go 1, 3, 4, 5, 5, 2, 1, or something like this, okay? So 1, 3, 4, 5, 5, 2, 1. So you can try this yourself. You just tap your finger on the bench or on the knee of the person next to you, whatever you like. You can just try going 1, 3, 4, 5, 5, 2, 1. So it's a little bit tricky. The idea is it's quite a simple pattern, quite easy to remember. If you keep going and doing this, hopefully you gradually get faster and faster. Okay, I can see, it works quite well. So it's a very simple motor task, very simple thing for your brain to learn. But actually, if you do this lots of times, you basically get faster and faster until it becomes pretty much automatic. Now what they found is that this is quite a simple thing to do, but then they took the groups of people and did some different things to them. So one group of people, they had a really good night's sleep. So they had the sleep people had lots of sleep. And then had a second set of people that kind of had a disrupted sleep. Their sleep was actually physically disrupted, where they were woken up every few hours. They had kind of a poor night's sleep. And then they had people that didn't actually sleep at all, and no sleep at all. And then the next day, they asked them to repeat the task, so do the same pattern of finger tapping as they saw before. And what they found, importantly, the people that had a good night's sleep, their performance actually improved. They actually got better and got faster at doing the task straight away. So their performance improved just by sleeping on it. Okay, I think it's quite astounding. Even a simple task like tapping your fingers, their performance got better after a good night's sleep. People with disrupted sleep did about the same, and people with no sleep at all, they actually did worse because obviously they were knackered. So they can be probably bothered. But the point is that having your sleep, that's an example of how the brain has been processing that very simple information over the night's sleep, and actually can improve your performance the next day. So really, this term of sleeping on it really is true, and it's been shown scientifically in very simple tests that having a good night's sleep was actually improve certain very simple tasks. So this idea of memory consolidation or processing information from the day during the night is really what they think is one of the main reasons for sleep, particularly in the more complex organisms. What this means in things like insects and things we can talk about in discussion, but that's another whole point. So that's what sleep might be for. So let's talk a little bit about what actually happens when we sleep. Well, we know it's not about energy saving, but what about dreams? Well, I'm not going to talk about dreams now. We can talk about it a little bit later. Certainly dreams are related to this memory consolidation, processing of information you've seen during the day. Lots of examples of people thinking that dreams can become real, or they sleepwalk and all these things. We can talk about it a little bit later, but certainly I'm not going to go into the detail of what dreams mean. That's kind of also like a slightly different side of science. But certainly dreams are an important part of our brain processing our information during the night. So what actually happens when we sleep? Well, as we know, most of us like to try and hopefully go to bed to sleep, right, much better than the sofa or an armchair or something like that, much more comfortable. And importantly, there's a lot of research being done on actually the positions that we sleep in and how it relates to our personality. Now, this stuff is slightly cod science, if you like. It was a proper study done by a psychiatrist. It was in one of the top medical journals in the world called the Daily Mail, I think it was called. That's right. I remember. And they see links. They basically asked 1,000 people what position they slept in, and they asked them a questionnaire about their personality, and see there's a link between the position they slept in and how they actually look when they sleep. So I'm going to refer to my notes and get this right. Okay, so they found that most people sleep in the fetal position. So I'm going to draw this here. So fetal position, as most of you know, is sort of tucked up with their feet and legs not crouching down, lying down, and their feet tucked up. So fetal position is kind of this position where the legs are tucked up like that, and you're sort of curled up like that. And that's about 40% of people appear to sleep in that position. So that's really most of us. This is done in Western Europe. So that's your sort of fetal position. So and apparently those people, it says here, that's most people, so that's a mixture of personalities. So that's kind of most people sleeping. Now, we get to the kind of the more unusual positions, according to the survey, and that's a little bit about how we actually feel. So we'll start with sleeping like a log. So the sleeping like a log is literally like a log. So here's a man or a person, so they're sleeping like a log. So literally they go straight down, arms straight down, feet straight down like that. That's sleeping like a log, okay? And that's 15% of people. And these people are apparently very easygoing. So that's an easygoing sleeping like a log. So I'll give them a smile. That's easy as a log. Now the yearners, okay, they're a little bit like a log. So they're kind of a similar sort of pattern where they have, they're sleeping straight down, legs straight down, but their arms are kind of like outstretched like this, you know, as if they're giving someone a cuddle, but there's no one there. Yeah? That's a yearner. And apparently those people are apparently very cynical. Apparently that's why they're sleeping on their own. I don't know. But next we have, there's not too many of these, but next we have the soldier. Now the soldier stands sort of upright, like it's attention, like that, so they have their arms straight like that, so that's a soldier. And apparently those people are quite quiet, apparently. If you're a free faller, that's basically sleeping like that, apparently, so that's face down, straight down arms like that, something like that, and obviously that's sort of facing down, so that's his hair. Those people are apparently very brash but nervy, apparently. And the last one apparently is called the starfish. Now, my wife tells me this is how I sleep when I've had too much to drink. The starfish is basically like this, straight out like that. That's a starfish, basically flat out like that, like that. And those people apparently are very helpful. Well, that's very nice. That's good. That's good. Anyway, so that's a bit of fun science. But basically, the idea is that everyone has different ways of sleeping, different ways of needing sleep, and also different ways they can actually lie in bed at night. In fact, also the survey showed that most people like to be covered up with the covers, but quite a lot of people actually have one foot sticking out, or even 2 feet sticking out. That's actually quite common. So if you're one of those people that has one foot sticking out because they get too hot, like that's why I have to do that, because my wife likes the bed really warm. That's another, I won't get into that now. That's actually very, very common, so don't worry if that's what you do. Lots of other people do that as well. So the next thing is actually thinking about what happens when we're asleep. So a little bit about what sleep's for, and we'll have a little bit of fun about what we do, but actually what about the stages of sleep? What does that actually mean? So the way they classify sleep is, some of you may have heard this term before about REM sleep and non-REM sleep. So this rapid eye movement sleep and non-rapid eye movement sleep. Let's explain it very briefly. So why they've done this is really categorise sleep into stages during the night. It's a very simple way of managing how do you control sleep. This is really based on electrical measurements of the brain, which has told us that stages of sleep overnight. So I was going to run through them very quickly. It's really the classic way of classifying sleep overnight. This, if you go to a sleep study centre or a hospital, this is kind of what they'll teach you. This is actually called a hypnogram. It's basically a term for the way they sort of graphically show a night's sleep. So it's something very simple. You just on a very simple graph. So we'll start with the wake period at the top. This is awake at the top here. Sorry, some of you can't see. I'm doing my best to do this. Awake at the top then. And basically go through stages of sleep during the night. So let's go. First, we start to feel a bit tired. You know, hopefully it's nice and quiet in the room. You've got your eyes shut. It's nice and not too noisy. You haven't had too much coffee. You're not just watching telly or anything just before bed. You start to relax. You start to go into the first stages of sleep. So, and then you go right down and hopefully go into these early stages of sleep. And what we really want to try and do, get into the still with what's called slow wave sleep, or the deep sleep, if you like. So that's the non-REM stages. So this is very important, because this is really the deep sleep, if you like. That's very important for us, because that's this deep sleep, if you like, is the most important part about refreshing ourselves. So having our deep sleep or slow wave sleep is really important for refreshing our bodies and refreshing our brain. That's very important for our well-being. So we go through these non-REM stages and go down into our slow wave sleep at the bottom here. So that's called slow wave sleep. And that's effectively our kind of deep sleep, if you might want to call it. Now, as most of you know, we have the REM sleep. Now, REM sleep is actually a slightly different state. So we actually go through, at the beginning of the night, we go through quite a long stage of slow wave sleep, this deep sleep at the beginning of the night, and then we might go into a short burst of what's called REM sleep, the rapid eye movement sleep, okay? And that goes for maybe a short burst, maybe that'll be sort of an hour or so of slow wave, and maybe sort of 30 minutes or so of REM. That's kind of how hopefully your ideal sleep will look like. So lots of nice deep sleep, a little bit of sort of REM sleep a bit later on. Now, importantly, the stages of sleep are very crucial, because the brain activity is quite different. Importantly, in REM sleep, that's when your body is actually paralysed. So basically, your body is basically made to sit still. So you think, if you're in evolutionary terms, if you're in a state where your body's made to be absolutely still, then it's obviously very bad for you. So obviously, you would be very much vulnerable. So if they think of having REM sleep is obviously important for us, but actually, if you think of it in terms of an animal being completely sort of paralysed and being sort of stuck where you can't move, it's actually quite tricky. So we're still not quite sure why the stages of sleep have occurred, how they have, but this is how it's illustrated in the moment. So you have a little bit of slow wave sleep, a little bit of REM sleep, and then basically as the night progresses, this cycle of non-REM, slow wave and REM kind of continues throughout the night. And gradually we have less and less slow wave sleep and a little bit more REM sleep. So that's how it works. So the graph if you draw it over a night, then start with kind of lots of slow wave sleep and a little bit of REM, and then you have a little bit slow wave and a bit more REM, etc. And you might go through this sort of stage, yet more and more REM as you go later in the night. So that's basically, you might think that you sort of dream a lot more later in the night. That's, in some way, that's true, because REM sleep is often where a lot of the dreaming is happening, if you like. And obviously, you might remember a dream, because often it's happened just a few minutes before you woke up. So this REM stage towards the end of the night is actually often when you're going to be dreaming things vivid in your memory. Okay, so we have lots of slow wave sleep at the start, and that diminishes through the night. And these cycles of slow wave sleep and REM go several times through the night. So kind of your model night's sleep would be kind of looking like this, with maybe three or four cycles of slow wave sleep and REM, and non-REM and non-REM sleep during the night. So that's kind of how it looks. But importantly, the brain activity is still very, very strong. So what we're not like paralysed, we're not unconscious. So it's not like hibernation, where obviously an animal's body is very much shut down. Our brain is very, very active, lots going on, lots of brain connections being made. So having these two stages of sleep is actually very crucial for making the brain connections. But what it actually means, we're still not quite sure how it relates to brain function. So that's a little bit how it looks. So that's what's called a hypnogram. Again, I can talk about this more in detail, but this gives you an idea of how the different stages of sleep work. Okay, let's talk a little bit about other animals. So it's very important to remember that obviously humans, we like to try and hopefully get sort of 7 or 8 hours sleep a night. And obviously it does vary between what jobs we have, what we're doing, how tired we are, obviously, of course. I'll talk about that a bit later. And also how old we are. That's actually very, very crucial. So, as you know, babies, when they're born, obviously they've been inside the womb. They haven't seen any light because obviously they've been inside the whole time. So when a baby's first born, obviously they're going to sleep for maybe 16 or 18 hours a day. And that's kind of normal. It takes quite a few weeks for a baby to get used to. Some of you might know, babies get used to a sort of standard sort of light-dark cycle, getting standard used to waking up and going to bed. When you get to a sort of teenagers and teenage years, it's actually quite important because as for teenagers, the hormones are obviously racing and things are changing very quickly in their bodies. And actually, for a teenager, they're actually naturally sleep a little bit later in the day. And that's actually a real phenomenon. It's not simply because teenagers are being lazy. Actually, physically in their bodies, their whole body clock's actually gradually shifted towards getting up later in the day. And that's actually a really true phenomenon. And that actually shifts back towards getting up very early as people get much older. So actually, the idea that older people getting up very, very early and sleeping less is actually very true, because literally the body clock of older people is actually shifted towards getting up early and going to bed early. So it's the whole thing shifts throughout your life. So it's very important. So your natural body clock, although everyone has a different cycle, that's their own kind of natural way of sleeping, actually naturally through your lifestyle, from a baby all the way through to a very old age, is actually very, very different. So you have to kind of adjust to that. As most of you, some of you may have heard, there was a school in, I think it's the Northeast, where they shifted the whole school day by an hour or so later in the day to make sure that teenagers were more awake in the mornings, and perhaps that would help the results. And the results were actually very good, although they did actually see an improvement in the reduction in truancy, improvement in results. Although the practicalities of having a school day that's shifted by an hour is obviously very difficult if you're a parent and things, it's very tricky. But they've actually shown, it's been shown also in America, that by having the lessons start a little bit later, especially for older teenagers, it fits in better with their body clock. And actually they improve, they're more alert in the morning, and actually improves their performance during the day. So this natural shift in our body clock through our lives is actually very important. And although most of us adjust our lives naturally, actually physically fitting the day around those cycles could actually be very important for us in the future. So in terms of humans, there's obviously a big mix of different types. Most of us try and get about 7 hours. The average is around about 7 and 7.5 hours. They've done lots of studies on sleep over the years, and they reckon the average is around about 7 hours, 7.5 hours in Western Europe. There's actually very little data on sleep, less than 50 years old. Lots of people talk about we're sleeping less than we were 50 years ago or 100 years ago, and really nobody actually knows. No one's actually ever done a proper study of sleep since the Second World War. So it's really a little bit of a misnomer about the fact we're sleeping less than we used to be. Obviously, our lifestyles are changing. There's more 24-hour news, and there's stronger, obviously, artificial lighting means our schedules are changing. But the actual amount of sleep we have, we really don't know how much sleep people had many years ago. Obviously, people that worked in, for example, in the agricultural industry, when obviously many hundreds of years ago relied on the sun coming up and going down for their daily lifestyle, obviously that would change. But the actual amount of sleep was probably about the same. Just over the year, it kind of shifted depending on when the sun's going up and down. Again, we can talk about more about that in a little bit more detail later. So what about other animals? So obviously I've mentioned about humans. Now we try and have 7 or 8 hours. What happens to other animals? So I did a little game on this last time, a very short time. So I'm just going to very briefly summarise the type of data that you get from animals. It's quite difficult to get data on animals' sleep because obviously most of them are in zoos or in houses, and of course that's not their natural environment, but there's quite a bit of data on a huge variation in the amount of sleep and resting state that the animals have. So starting at the top of the tree then, obviously your classic kind of lazy animal would be like a snake that had a big meal, or maybe a bat or a python. So those animals, yeah, they do sleep a lot. So basically think of a lot of the bats, I think the brown-nosed bats, about the record, sleeps around about 18 hours a day. That's kind of one of the ones that sleeps the most. And it's really the top of the sleeping level. I think something like a python that's eaten a massive antelope, that would probably sleep for at least probably a big chunk of 24 hours, maybe less, but certainly many, many hours. So python, we'll give it again, around an average of 16, 18 hours. So really most of the day to spend asleep. Now if you think a bit further down the tree, then obviously a classic animal you might see is very, very lazy, might be a sloth. Now, of course, with the sloth, as most of you know, maybe into Cotswold Wildlife Park, they've got sloths in the White House there, they're fantastic. Now what they found in the wild, sloths will sleep for about 12 or 14 hours, but in captivity they'll sleep a lot longer. So it actually is quite tricky to get some data, but certainly a sloth would actually sleep again for around about 14 hours. So quite a long time. In captivity it ends up being about 17 or 18, but certainly a sloth's up there with some of the other animals. If you're talking about some primates, so things like so chimpanzees, gorillas, again around about 10, 11 hours, so quite a large amount of time. Dolphins, again, more sort of complex mammals that live in the sea, they're around about 12 hours or so. Obviously humans, as I mentioned before, obviously varies depending on how old you are. So you might start from a baby, 16 hours, down to sort of maybe 7.5 hours, around to about sort of 5.5 hours for maybe an old age pensioner. So a real range depending on how old you are. If you start thinking about things, animals don't sleep very much at all, then you have to go down to the farmyard and go to the hoofed animals. So the ungulates, often as they're called. So things like horses and sheep and goats only sleep for maybe 2 or 3 hours a night. That's amazing, because obviously they spend a lot of their time having to feed, having to digest their food. So you're down to sort of 2 or 3 hours a night, down to sort of sheep and goats and things, and obviously and horses as well. Some of them really only sleep for maybe 2 or 3 hours a night. So it's quite a very different pattern of sleep and wake. And this does depend on obviously their lifestyle, and also depends on how they're having to deal with their feeding cycles. And right at the very bottom, as some of you may have heard before, one of the lowest sleepers in the animal kingdom is actually the giraffe. The giraffe sleeps around about 1 or maybe 2 hours a night at the most, really about 1 or 2 hours. And I'm sure you've seen giraffes, and they're in these tall creatures, but actually they've shown they actually do sleep on the ground for actually really short periods of time. And obviously if you're a giraffe, if you're lying on the ground and curled up, it's incredibly unsafe for you to be there. And I think that's partly why they think they've evolved a very, very short sleeping pattern and really can cope with only a few hours of sleep a day. And of course, if they're down there, and obviously they're a prime target for lions and things, so they have to stagger the sleep between the groups. So there might be a couple of giraffes asleep and some of them awake, and they swap the shifts around. So really quite a complex process. Just to give you a flavour, we're going to talk about this a bit more later, give you a flavour how across the animal kingdom there's a real variation in sleep, and that really varies on the biology of the animal, where it sleeps, what time zone it's in, of course, and also how it relates back to its potential conflict with being eaten by other animals, with predators, and also how their general body metabolism works. So we'll talk about that more a little bit later. Now, I always get this question, what about insects and things? Well, obviously, most of the animal kingdom is made up of insects, and we don't know much about really small animals and how they sleep. There's certainly evidence that they have brain states where they're less active. They don't move around so much. If you watch an ant kind of crawling around, it does stop, and maybe is it sleeping? Well, probably not, but certainly brain activity might be reduced compared to other parts of the day. Certainly there's the parts, I'll talk a little bit a second about the brain, but certainly the genetics or the makeup of these animals is complex enough to actually have a rhythm, because they certainly do have some kind of biological rhythm, but sleep in insects is certainly not well understood at all. So I can't tell you much more about that, but certainly there's certainly activity and wake and sleep profiles that might relate back to what you see in mammals. So the next thing I want to touch on is a little bit about how the body actually controls sleep. We're going to touch this very, very briefly. We can talk about it a bit more detail. So as you know, the brain is a very, very incredibly complex thing. It's made up of about 100 billion neurons. So it's 100 billion neurons. Can I do it here? 1, 2, 3. Is that right? 1, 2, 3. That's it, right? That's 100 billion. That's right. There we go. 100 billion neurons. But actually importantly, that the part of the brain that really controls the body clock is actually very, very tiny. It's about the size of a grain of rice, probably, I don't know, basmati, I don't know, long grain, certainly very, very small. And that's only made up of about 20,000 neurons. So really only a tiny, tiny proportion of the whole brain is actually really responsible for the whole body clock. And this is actually called the suprachiasmatic nucleus, or the SCN. I'm just going to call it the SCN from now on, okay? And it's a very tiny thing. It's situated kind of at the base of the brain towards the back. I can't really show you here. It's kind of right in the middle at the back of the brain. And it's very, very small, made up of two lobes. It's like two little pairs, if you like. It's kind of a pear-shaped structure, like this. Two lobes like this. And that's situated in what's called the hypothalamus. And so I'll talk about that more a bit later, if you like. And this part of the brain is really, really powerful. And that really controls our body clock. Okay, so really 20,000 neurons out of 100 billion is the thing that really controls our daily cycle. And how this works is it actually receives input from the eyes. So obviously the eyes can see the light, and it helps teach the body what time of day it is. So you have the eyes here. And it has direct connections from the back of the eye, the retina, which connects to the SCN. And the SCN then helps communicate the time of day, the rhythm, to the rest of the body. So this is really key for the whole rhythm of the body. And you may have heard the term circadian rhythm before. So that's how circadian actually means about a day. So it comes from the Latin, or the Greek, I'm not sure. Circa is about, and day is a day. So circadian is about a day. And that's really the endogenous rhythm, the body clock of your body ticking along all the time. Now, the SCN really controls this body ticking over 24 hours. So what you'll find is that your body clock is so powerful that the input from other stimulations like light or food and things does affect your body, but actually your internal clock, the brain ticking away, is actually so strong it can actually overpower all those things together. So give an example then. So what happens then if for example, you switch the lights off completely and we don't have any more light coming into your eyes, can your body still cope? Does your body still know what time of day it is? Well, that's pretty much what happens. So this has, again, it's going back to students again, more students being put in horrible situations. So this time there, some students have been put into complete darkness for several long time. We can't do this anymore. This is done in the 60s. But it's a basic example of how we can analyse these things in humans. So basically we have a set of people that are basically in complete darkness for a long time. And the question was, can they still tell what time of day it is? As their brain, as their body, still have its own rhythm without having light coming into its eyes or being told with any clocks around, do we still know what time of day it is? Well, it's pretty close, as you'd probably expect. So in a sort of a normal person, they have like a standard sort of cycle of kind of activity and non-activity. So let's call this kind of... So they call this day and let's call this night and day, if you like. So active during the day and night time, they're not active. What happens when there's no light coming in, there's nothing to entrain the body to tell us exactly kind of what time of day it is or to teach the body what's going on. So therefore, your endogenous body clock, your internal body clock has to take over. And because it's called circadian rhythm, which means about a day, your circadian rhythm is actually a little bit, it's not quite exactly 24 hours. It's slightly different. So it's like shifting of the pattern. So what happens then if someone's in complete darkness then? So this is somebody in light and dark here. Then they go into complete darkness, so then their body clock takes over. Then things are shift slightly a little bit every day. It's not exactly 24 hours. So here's what it would normally be. And what happens is it's around about, it's just over 24 hours. So basically every day gets slightly longer than the one before. So we actually see a shifting of the body clock this way, like this, as we go along the day. So it's a slight angle of the curve, if you like. And that's your endogenous body clock, your internal body clock taking over and trying to sort of teach the body what time of day it is, if you like. So you can see how even without light coming in or being told what time of day it is or having food at a certain time, your brain can actually tell us kind of roughly what day it is. And again, I can go into more detail on that a little bit later. So that's a little bit about the brain and how it controls sleep. A little bit about the SCN and how it's such a very important part of our brain that controls our sleep. Let's a little bit think what happens when things go wrong. Well, certainly, if somebody has a problem with their brain, for example, a lesion or an injury, or maybe a cancerous tumour that's in the part of the brain that controls the body clock, then things go completely wrong. So people that have tumours in their SCN, they're completely what's called free run, and that means their SCN can't tell them what time of day it is at all, and basically they have real problems in trying to coordinate in their daily activity with the time of day, and that's very, very tricky. The same if you go to have jet lag, the same if you travel to another country. Of course, your body is now out of synchrony with what's happening with the light and dark, and that's quite very tricky. Same with people that go and have shift work. Again, shift work is where you might be working for several hours, effectively the wrong time of day, or maybe working nights, or working across the time zones. Again, that's very tricky for your body to cope. And actually, what they found over the years, that having these different shifts in time, whether it's jet lag lots of times, or maybe lots of shift work, is actually very detrimental for your health. There's actually slightly higher risk of things like cancer and heart disease and things when people have a very long lives for the work with shift work as opposed to those who have a very standard sort of light dark kind of structure. So certainly messing with your body clock either by accident or either through work or maybe your job can actually have a real important feature on your health. So although people have found this out quite recently, having good night's sleep is very good, but having a very structured day is actually better for you than having a very disrupted day and trying to fight against your natural body rhythm. Okay, so that's one of the few things to mention about your internal body clock. So let's have a little think about other animals. We saw a little bit about other animals. We looked a little bit about how it's controlled. But why do we sort of have patches of the day when we feel tired and other times we see more awake? Well, this is quite a complex process, mixing several different parts of the brain and the body together. And what a classic thing that some of you might feel is that you might have a normal day, you get up normal time, you had a good night's sleep, you have a nice big lunch, and you get very tired just after lunch, around about 2 o'clock, 1:30, you start to feel tired. And that's basically your body fighting between trying to stay awake and trying to go to sleep. I'm trying to explain how that works very briefly. So our circadian rhythm and our internal body has to kind of control our sleep-wake cycle very carefully to make sure that we're sleepy at the right time and obviously nice alert at the right time, okay? So how this works then, we have two parts of the story. We have our circadian rhythm, which kind of is our keeping our body clock ticking over at the right time of day. So we kind of plot this like a curve like this, okay, something like that kind of thing, which is our kind of circadian rhythm here. And that's kind of that's our kind of our drive for sleep. So obviously at night time, we're pushing it towards sleep time, and then obviously at daytime it's much lower. But also we have what's called our homeostat. Now, a homeostat is just kind of a fancy name for basically how sleepy we feel. And that's basically all the other inputs to your body, basically how physically tired we are. And obviously that has to fight against that. So we have to kind of match our time between our circadian rhythm and our homeostat. So basically during the day, obviously we get more sleepy. So our homeostat goes something like this. So that's our sleep. So sleep here. So our homeostat during the daytime is actually increasing, basically getting more and more sleepy during the day as we go through. So this kind of lull during the lunchtime is basically a mixture between our body clock telling us, okay, it's the middle of the day, let's start to get ready for going to sleep a bit later in the day, and our homeostat, mm-hmm. basically our body telling us that we start to get tired. And that's basically the mixture of these two things together, fighting it out between them,
And that slight imbalance between your, what's called your homeostat and your circadian rhythms, means you get this slight imbalance, you get this slightly sleepy patch towards lunchtime. Most of you know, a lot of countries have siestas, which is a lot of people, they really think it's a very good idea. And that really links back to this idea that having a siesta in the middle of the day is really letting your body clock win, if you like, and having a little bit of a rest in the middle of the day when you're kind of fighting out between being sleepy and being awake. And then having a short burst of sleep, maybe an hour or maybe 20 minutes is enough, and then obviously going into sleep a bit later. So certainly siestas, that really comes from quite a strong biological reason for having those, and lots of people swear by them. Again, naps in children is really based on, again, this kind of body clock fighting against your natural need for sleep. And certainly, it's certainly nothing wrong with having a short bout of sleep. But what you don't want to do is have a very long sleep in the middle of the day, because if you have a very long sleep, you start to get back to your rhythms of sleep and wake cycles, and things start to go slightly wrong. I'll just explain it here. So if we go back to our sleep-wake cycles of slow-wave sleep and non-REM, so what happens is if you have a long nap in the middle of the day, maybe only 2 or 3 hours, just to kind of catch up if you like, you might get down into a slow-wave sleep, or your deep sleep, and then you suddenly have to wake up. Okay, you're sitting aware by alarm or something. And actually, get your body to wake up from slow-wave sleep is actually quite tricky. And actually, that's one of the problems that makes you feel really, really tired when you wake up. And actually, having a long sleep means you start getting into the deep sleep stage, and it's much harder to wake up in the morning. So actually, having a short siesta or a short nap of maybe 20 minutes or so keeps you in this early stage of sleep, the non-REM sleep stage here, and that's where it's much easier to wake up. But having a longer sleep means you have to go back to this slow-wave sleep stage. So certainly, having a short nap is good. Having a long sleep in the middle of the day is really not so good. That's really how the siesta idea comes from. So that's something you may have heard about a little bit about before. Okay, we've got a couple of minutes, maybe 2 minutes. Yeah, it's fine. So, just very briefly mention about how this relates to sort of human health, and obviously I work for the Medical Research Council, and we're interested in how improving mental health, and improving health generally. There's obviously lots of links between sleep disruption and disease. Obviously, I mentioned very, very briefly about disease and maybe shift work and loss of jet lag. Also, lots of link between disrupted sleep and things like late onset disorders such as Parkinson's or Alzheimer's, where actually sleep disruption or slight sleep disturbance is actually a quite important feature that's seen very early on in disease. It doesn't mean if you don't sleep very well you're going to get one of these disorders, but it's kind of a very useful early marker that can be used to learn a bit more how these disorders happen. Also in mental health, very poor sleep is very certainly reported in things like autism, schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. Again, these things aren't, if you don't sleep bad, it doesn't mean you're going to get these things or be susceptible. Just means that these actually might be important markers for to understand more about these disorders. Certainly what they're starting to do is see if they can actually improve people's sleep, either by cognitive behavioural therapy or just education, and see if that can actually improve people's mental health. And that's actually been shown, even work here in Oxford has shown that even improving people's sleep just by education about sleep times or improving the way they sleep or their bedroom facilities or that kind of thing can have a really important and really improvement in their general well-being. And it's not just anecdotal evidence, it's real evidence from scientific studies. So we're just starting to find out that having a good night's sleep, as I mentioned before, is very good for you, but it can actually really be very important for your health in general. I can talk about more about a little bit of that in general, but certainly having good night's sleep is really good for your health in lots of ways. Another thing they've tried to do is look at older people, looking at the fact of levels of light are very, very crucial. So levels of light in this type of room here, obviously we have what's called the lux level, so basically how bright the room is, and these lights are probably sort of several hundred lux. But of course outside, and obviously in the sunshine, it's thousands, several thousand lux. It's much, much, much brighter, although it's a little bit hard to tell. So what they've tried doing, especially in old people's homes, is to have much, much brighter lights, and in hospitals as well, much, much brighter lights at the right time of day, and then gradually fade the lights down during the day to kind of sort of basically copy the kind of daylights disappearing, the sun going down, to try and basically re-educate the body to thinking it's kind of a normal kind of light level. Rather than having months and months being stuck behind these very low light levels, try and increase the light levels down to the right time. And they've shown, again, it's really have a really positive effect on general people's well-being, their general mood, as well as actually really improvements in some general health markers. So certainly having the right light levels at the right time, at the right place, can have really important effects on your well-being. And certainly in terms of light, a very, very important thing is that the light spectrum, as most of you know, is this large range of wavelengths of light. The blue light that you have in things like your screens from your computers or your TVs and especially your LCD screens, that blue level of light is actually very stimulating for the brain. So actually watching TV or having your computer on just before you go to sleep is actually really the worst thing you can do, because that frequency of light is the one that really keeps the brain awake, keeps the brain going. So if you want to not improve your sleep, one simple thing you can do that some people think is to switch your computer off quite a long time before you go to sleep, and that helps to reduce the light levels and get them at the right level at the right time. And actually being dark
And actually, some people I know wear eye patches. Not eye patches. That's for pirates. Eye masks or two eye patches. That can actually really improve people's sleep. Again, in fact, it's dark at the right time of day compared to being light at the right time. It's actually a very crucial part. It's often forgotten that, of course, now we live in a 24-hour society where there's lights on all the time, lights in the streets. Of course, many years ago, it was completely dark at the right time of day. And so having the light level at the right time is also very important for your sleep and well-being. Okay, so that's another little thing to mention. So that's probably wrapped up there. Okay, so basically to summarise very quickly then, so just a little bit about, so I touched on lots of things very briefly just to kind of stimulate discussion really. So a little bit about what sleep's for, we still don't quite know what it's for, a little bit about what we do when we sleep, a little about the stages of sleep, a tiny bit about dreaming, a little about sleep and other animals, and also about how having really good night's sleep is very good for you and good for your health generally. So I hope you all sleep well tonight. That's good. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you very much indeed, Peter. That was a fascinating introduction. I'm sure that's given us all a lot to think about. So we'll take about 5 minutes break, and please feel free to come and help us ask for any more drinks, get my helpers to fill up the squash and the water as well, and do finish off the wine. And we'll see everyone back in about 5 minutes. Thank you.
Hello, how are you doing?